So here we are in the season of Thanksgiving, which is, of course, what November brings us. Forget all of the Christmas stuff that's out there. We're still in the season of Thanksgiving. Of course, and it's about giving, giving with an attitude of thanks. That's why it's called Thanksgiving. And that's why it's why we talk about stewardship during this season of the year. I know Mike talked about stewardship last week. Nancy talked about stewardship. And of course, stewardship is something that we need to talk about. Mike said to me, "Stan, you can talk about whatever you want." And oftentimes clergy don't want to talk about stewardship because they're going to want to talk about money. We don't, you know, we often get feedback that it's self-serving, or we just harp on people about money all the time, which is not really true, but we could. After all, it's in the Bible. 16 out of 38 parables are about money and stewardship. One out of every six verses in the New Testament is about stewardship. One out of six, that's a lot. So let's see, 52 Sundays in the year, let's talk about maybe 10 Sundays which we could talk about stewardship. We're only going to do it for two, last Sunday and this Sunday. I'm going to talk about stewardship because it's important. There's a story about a prosperous church member who was called upon to make a commitment to the year's giving, you know, the year, the annual budget, and the person who was calling him called on the phone and said, "You know, we'd like for you to consider your pledge to the church and your giving to the church." And he immediately said, "I'll give you my mite." The caller on the other end said, "Well, you might want to reconsider that." Because if you're talking about giving your mite, that means everything. Because in the story, she gives everything. Maybe you suggest 10% of the widow's mite. You know, in the Jewish tradition, that's where we get the tithe of 10%. It's not the Christian thing, it's the Jewish thing. In the Jewish tradition, you give 10% of your income. You don't actually give it, you return it to God. Because God has given it to us, we return it, is what it's all about. Okay. But, of course, then we get to Jesus. And Jesus doesn't talk about giving 10%. Jesus always talks about giving everything. Okay, can we pause here? Wait a minute. Everything? You want us to give everything? Pretty clear. Pretty clear, Jesus is. But then again, we have always known that stewardship is, of course, more than just about money. It's about giving of your time, your talents, all the things that you are capable of doing, all of your abilities here on earth, all our gifts we receive from God, and we are expected to be good stewards in return, good caretakers, you might say. Be willing to offer some of it back as a way of expressing our love for God. Good idea, I think, when you consider it. What would stewardship season be without the widow's mite? This little story that we find in Mark and then again in Luke. It would be like Thanksgiving without turkey. Okay, Mike doesn't eat turkey. We understand that. You could be a vegetarian. But it's still Thanksgiving without turkey. Or Christmas without presents. Or Easter without eggs. Can you imagine that? Of course not. The story of the widow's mite is the all-time great story of Christian giving. The story of a poor woman who gave everything she had. What the rich young ruler could not do, she did without even being asked to do it. Only there was no crowd to witness the liquidation of her estate. It was as easy as just uncurling her fingers and dropping them into those two copper coins into the temple treasury. Still damp from her hands that she had been from her holding them, where they made such a small sound that probably only she could hear it. I wonder if those widows, two lepta, which is in the Greek, those two small copper coins, are about 1/5 of a penny. That's what a lepta is. Or if you go to the Roman quadrantes, that's like 2/5 of 1 cent each coin would be. and that went into the legal or the free will offering container there in the temple that the treasury oversaw. Perhaps the widow's little lepta clinked while the scribes were offering all of their ostentatious silence in that moment. Perhaps the scribes were maybe a little too self-serving to even hear the widow's little embarrassing clinks. I brought along a little reminder of what that might be like. I did an interim ministry in Newport Beach at Harbor Christian Church, and I had this guy who was kind of an amateur archaeologist. He had brought back from Israel these copper coins. They're little copper coins. They're ancient, really old. I don't know how old they are. They maybe go back to the time of Jesus. And if you were to take just, they're little. They're all corroded now, of course, from being in the dirt for maybe centuries. If you were to take those two copper coins and drop them in, that's what it would sound like. She dropped her two copper coins in. Clink. But did they hear it? Did anybody hear it? Imagine all of the hoopla going on in the temple at that time. Did anybody really hear it? As far as we knew, no one heard it, and no one even saw her put her two coins into the treasury. But then again, nobody ever saw her. She was a nobody. She was somebody who was invisible, a bit player on the stage of what was going on in the temple at that time. One of the extras who ringed the stage with all the major characters in the middle, you know, with their robes and their hats and their refined silk clothing or whatever they had on, all of that stuff. I considered wearing a robe today. I decided against it. I didn't want to. You know, ministers are kind of known for wanting to be a little dressed up, you know. The reason we wear these stoles is after we preach, we kind of like to stroke ourselves a little. No, I don't know if that's true or not. But certainly in the temple at that time, there were those at the center stage who were all dressed up. They were looking good, right? But this little lady in the temple scene that Mark and Luke described for us, those characters include the rich people and the scribes, among the many, many others, all of those somebodies who were part of the temple structure. They were the temple clergy, of course, who wore those long robes. Their names were listed in the bulletin. They were the big shots, you know. They're the people who parents wanted their children to know because they were really important. They were not paid, of course. They got their income from, well, there was a little dipping into the poor box or the temple treasury, or they had students who would pay them a little bit. Moreover, they got, of course, all the benefits of the people's wanting to wrangle invitations to them so that they would come to their homes and be seen with all of these important. They got the best seats, the best cuts of meat, the best wine. They were didn't have a lot of money, but certainly they were not without honor. They were the ones to watch. They are the ones everybody looked at. Only Jesus was not watching them on that temple day. No, he was not watching them at all. He saw her walk in, give up her two coins, and something about the way she did it, the length of the time she stood there, maybe or the way that she cradled them in her hand like two precious eggs. Something about the way she did it let him know that it was the end for her, that it was everything she had, so that when she surrendered those coins and turned to go, he knew that she had nothing left. If you read a couple verses before in Luke and Mark, you realize that the temple, there's a line in there about how the temple clergy or the temple leaders or whatever would grab the widow's homes. In other words, when you become so poverty-stricken, you can't even keep your home, what happens to that home? Others come in and sweep it up. Beware, it says, of those who go after widows' homes. Her sacrifice was complete, of course, so complete that Jesus calls over the disciples to witness it. Truly, I tell you, the poor widow has put in more than all of those who are contributing from their abundance to the treasury. For all of them, out of their abundance. But she, out of her poverty, has put in everything that she had. That's why we know about her today. That's the only reason we know about her. If Jesus had not pointed her out, we wouldn't know about her. That nameless woman, because she gave what little she had, holding nothing back. If you think that tithing is heroic, try following that widow. She was a percentage giver, of course. It was just 100%, okay? So Jesus doesn't dismiss the gifts of the rich. He doesn't say anything negative about them. He doesn't even lambast the temple leaders. He doesn't say any of that. He doesn't even lift her up. He doesn't say, wow, she is so remarkable. He doesn't say anything. He just points out what she did and lets you draw the conclusion. The poor widow, who turns out to be the major donor of all. Barbara Brown Taylor says, this is the last of his dizzy lessons in the upside-down kingdom of God, where the last shall be first and the great shall be servants of all, and the most unlikely people will turn out to have been Christ himself in disguise. I remember when I was a seminary student, I had a poster. You know, there were a lot of posters back in those days. You could order them from Argus Posters and other places like that. We were big into posters. Anyway, I had one poster that I'd put on my wall it was a picture of a poor tenement area, and there was a stoop on this tenement building, and there was a kind of a raggedy child sitting on that stoop. And at the bottom it said, must Christ die in every age for those who have no imagination? Wow. I put that up because I wanted it to remind me of the fact that I needed to pay attention to the fact that Jesus Christ is not just something in the past. This is what we're talking about today. Today. Where did that widow go when she left the temple? We have no idea. But we could look for her. We could look for her. We could look around town for her. And I'd like to tell you that I've been looking for her, but that really isn't true. She is not one of the people I look for. She is more like one of the people that I try not to see, you know? I want them to be invisible. The problem is, she's harder and harder to miss. Really harder and harder to miss. I'm never positive who she is. Only she knows that for sure. But there are some clues. I want to give you a few clues. One is, she is not one of the main characters. If you're thinking about looking for the Christ as one of the main characters, I think you're looking in the wrong place. If you have no peripheral vision, you may miss her altogether. Sometimes she is a he. Sometimes she is a child. Sometimes she is even a scribe or maybe a clergy. Now you see her, then you don't. So if you want to spot her, you have to really pay attention. You have to watch because you never know where she's going to turn up. Second clue is that she is usually giving something away. Her time, her heart, her living, her life. The general rule is that you can't see how much it costs her but it is always more than you think. This is the person who gives. There was a story about a fellow who had fallen down in the subway system in some major city and collapsed there on the ground, and there were a lot of homeless people around, and there were a lot of commuters who were moving through that station, and it was only the homeless people who went to that person's aid. They went and got napkins from a coffee place and wiped off his sweating face, and they found whatever they could to put under his head to make it softer for him. They were the ones who responded and did something out of their nothingness. The third clue that you're going to find somebody who is willing to be a giving person is that what they do rarely makes sense. It rarely makes sense. By any ordinary human standard anyway, it is as if she gets her orders from another planet. Where a superior beings know things that we do not yet know, such as, let go of the little that you have in order to receive the more that you do not. Let go of the little that you have in order to receive the more you do not. There are probably a lot of other clues. I don't know. You need to search this for yourself. You need to look for more clues to how it is that we can respond to what Jesus is calling us to do, to be good stewards of this earth and of each other. You can probably come up with some good clues for yourself, but always ask yourself the question, where is Christ in this picture? Amen.